Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. Dane is back with me, of course. And Dane, sometimes you just gotta pat yourself on the back, man. We're doing pretty good for ourselves. We got some big time guests, man.
It's okay. It's
all right. Humble. You're right. Stay humble.
But who do we got this week? Who's joining us today?
Bro, this guy is an award-winning journalist for the Bleacher Report, also the host of one of my favorite shows that took the sports world by storm last year, Untold Stories. Master Tesfasian, man, he killed it on this talk that you guys are about to listen to. Dane, what did you get out of this, bro?
I got out of this the realness, the authenticity of someone who's an experience. It sounds like an experienced veteran in his field, you know, that truly appreciates the craft of not only getting a story straight from the horse's mouth, but also just sticking to whatever makes you, you know, not putting up some sort of front, not, you know, being something that you're not, but just being your full black authentic self. And that's something we don't get a lot of times in this industry or any industries for that matter. So for him to appreciate, you know, people's journeys the way that he does, and then just being able to relate to the plight that we go through, not only just here in Texas, but just in the skin that we live in. So just the authenticity is what I appreciated from him the most. And, you know, of course, he's a Texas boy. Yeah. So, you know, can't go wrong with that.
Real down to earth Texas. Oh, you can't get better than that.
I mean, he's a Mavs fan. That's the only bad thing I can say about him. That's about it.
Bless his heart. Don't hate. Mavs all day. But yeah, man, Master was great. And I can't wait. We can't wait for you guys to listen to it. So here is our sit down talk with Master Tesfasian.
Now listening to the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. Here are your hosts, Deontay Epps and Dane Beasley.
Master, how you doing, man? Appreciate you coming on.
I'm good, man. Appreciate y'all for having me on, man.
Appreciate you. So you're from Texas. We literally just talked about you coming from Texas. We're both from Texas. What was it like growing up for you?
Yeah, I love Texas, man. Like, for me, actually, I just actually moved back. So I'm working remotely out of back home in Dallas. And I missed it, man, because I spent the last 11 years outside of Texas since I graduated high school in 2009. And so, you know, since then, I've been to Arizona, Seattle, Minneapolis, D.C., New York, like just been literally from coast to coast. And, man, I've always wanted to come back somehow, some way. Being close to the fam, it's just Texas is different, man. Like, it's nothing like it. It's, you know, it's chill, it's relaxed, like, you know, the slow pace, the environment, you know, especially like when it comes to black culture, like I feel like it's the most slept on. You feel me? Like, you know, you black in Texas, it's like a fraternity in itself. You feel me? Like, right. The way that we talk, the way that we were influenced, the way that we were raised, what we aspire to do and how we, you know, how we got to grind and hustle and do what we got to do, man. Because when you talk about systemic oppression and shit, in too many states, you're going to find more that's going to oppress you as much as Texas do. But, you know, we still find a way to fight through it. You know what I'm saying? We still find a way to band together and create beauty out of the imperfections that exist within the state's you know, history and legacy. So I'm just glad to be back, man. At some point, I'm going to get the grill in. You feel me? You know, I'm talking about my looking like a chandelier. You know what I'm saying? Hey. You know, like another year. I'm going to work on this slab, man. I don't know what to do here. Give me like another year or two. My homie, shout out my boy Herm out in Atlanta at Roadshow International. You know, he be customizing cars for like Lil Baby, all these different rappers and athletes and artists and stuff like that too. So he got the game on lock. And I see him posting them all the time. He's these old school Impalas, you know what I'm saying? He got some boys out in Florida. He's making donks for them. Like, nah.
Hey.
You know what I'm saying? I'm going to need some on Blaze here soon. You know? Hey.
So
you're from the Dallas area?
Yeah. Born in Dallas, grew up in Section 8 out there. And then I think like when I was 2 years old, we moved to Irving, which obviously, you know, people historically know is like where the old Texas Stadium was at. You know what I'm saying? During the Cowboys glory days. You know, we coming back. You know what I'm saying? But
Dave the Cowboy fan, a hopeless Cowboys fan.
So I'm just like, ugh.
I feel you. You know what I'm saying? I don't fuck with Jerry Jones. You know what I'm saying? But,
yeah. You know, not many of us do.
But you know, it's all about the city and supporting the city and riding for, you know, my city and the team that reps my city. So, but yeah, man. And then, you know, after like age two, you know, we moved out to Urban. And, you know, my folks have still been here ever since. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, from that point, the Section 8 apartments that we grew up in, you know, we got a crib, I think by the time I was like 9 or 10 years old. And so that's the same crib my folks live in now. You feel me?
Nice.
My folks are originally from Eritrea, a country in East Africa. That's what, shout out, you know, R.P. Nip. Yep. Always repped it hard. So, you know, that's where my folks originally from and came from that fight. And, you know, I feel like it's just the perfect blend, man. You know what I'm saying? The fight and hunger that comes from Eritrea and also being immersed in Texas culture as a black man. Like it.
Yeah.
The more I look at it, man, it's just, I'm just appreciative I was able to get the best of both worlds when it comes to that shit, you know?
Yeah, 100%. So what led you down the path into sports journalism? What brought you from that point to here?
That's a good question, man. For me, I didn't grow up wanting to do this. I wasn't one of the motherfuckers that saw Stuart Scott on the screen. It was like, oh, I can do that. Like, that was, that was not obtainable to me. Like, I was like, that's cool what he's doing. I'll fuck what he's doing. But, like, that's a whole different world that I can't relate to in my in my environment. You know, they don't teach us to dream that big, straight up. So, just like every other black man in Texas, shit, you're going to play football. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to think football's going to be an outlet. Sophomore in high school, you know, messed up my knee. Things didn't work out. Now, I feel like that was just God's way of telling me this ain't it for you. And so, at that point, I didn't know what I wanted to do. But, you know, I was in high school, I was messing around with cameras. I was on the media tech team, the broadcast team. And the only reason why I really did it, because all my people who were older than me were telling me, if you're getting this, it's an easy A. It's, you know, it's a fun time, loose class time. And plus, you get to be on the TV screen so the girls get to see you. And you know what I'm saying?
Say less.
Easy A, cool class, girls get to see me. Shit. Nothing else really mattered. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's funny because even though those were my ambitions, like what I learned from it was, you know, how to record, like how to shoot on JVC, Panasonic, Sony's, how to edit off of Premiere Pro, Avid, Final Cut. Learn all this stuff from high school. And at the time, you know, everyone's doing it now, but at the time it was just, you didn't have the resource access to do that. So it spurred this idea of creativity that I never have been taught before. No one taught me to be creative before.
Right.
So, you know, I'm directing newscasts, I'm producing game shows, making PSAs, short films, you know, movie trailers, all that stuff. And my senior high school, my teacher's like, so yo, what do you want to do? I told him, man, like, bro, honestly, I don't know. Like, and here's the two thoughts I have. Dave Chappelle just walked away for $50 million. In my mind, again, you know, as a black man, especially from the South, you have very narrow lanes in which you believe that you can make it out of your social and economic status. So when I heard a black man was making 50 mil, I said, shit, let me hit up Killeen, Texas, Biloxi, Mississippi, you feel me? Let me go to Decatur real quick, you know what I'm saying? And then I can hit the road, make 800K, just doing like some small-time comedy. I'm like, that's double what my parents make right now, shit. That sounds like the life. That was my ceiling. Right. Like, that would have been great. And I told him the option B was just to join the military, which I'm sure you guys understand in Texas. Like, they push that shit heavy on us starting middle school. Yep. You know what I'm saying? So, they got the Hummers outside. They have the Hummers outside with the subs and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they had the same stuff for us, you know, trying to influence us and to get us to join the military. And I was thinking about doing it just due to the fact that they would pay for my college. My teacher was like, bro, you talk about sports all the time. Like, you know, why don't you become a sports writer? And in my mind, it was just such a foreign thought, because all I saw on the TV screen were former athletes. And in my mind, I'm like, they already got paid. They doing this for free because they trying to stay in the limelight. They don't want people to forget about them because they done playing. So they doing this for free for the publicity and notoriety. The idea of, you know, fame or fortune, you know what I'm saying? I literally took that literally, where you have to choose one or the other. Not recognizing, like, even people on TV get paid to do this. So it's like, nah, people get paid to do this stuff. I'm like, oh shit. You know, Google researching, trying to do whatever I can to figure out what this is. You know, and then from there, it took off, man. This career, like, just been grinding from that point and taking everything I learned from my environment, situations in which, you know, you kind of have your back against the wall, fight or flight, and applying those in an industry in which I didn't know anybody. I didn't know what I was doing, per se. And I didn't know where I wanted to go with it. But, hey, man, 11 years later, I'm still here. You know what I'm saying? It's all smooth, man.
That's nice, man. It's funny you mentioned Stuart Scott, because growing up, I was watching cartoons. Everybody was watching cartoons growing up. And then there was like that switch, like from playing football. Like, man, I'm waking up watching SportsCenter in the morning instead of cartoons. It was like reruns of SportsCenter every morning, getting ready for school. And you could recite it like that. Like, because, you know, every highlight, they used to run it over and over, the same highlights. And so I remember Stuart Scott in the morning, Dan Patrick, all those guys. And they were really an inspiration to me. And that led me to do, because I was a sports reporter a little bit here in the Waco area for like a year or so. So that was one of my inspirations and something I strive to do. So I definitely feel you on that.
It's crazy like what representation will do. And I think that's really like, you know, a big subject conversation in the industry we're in right now, is like how important representation is, how important it is for us to see a Stuart Scott, to see a Jamel Hill, Michael Smith, Bomani Jones. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I think we're in a position now where, you know, before we would only get Stuart Scott whenever he was on for that hour. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, we would only get Jamel whenever they were on for that hour. You know what I'm saying? We would only get Bomani when he was on for that 30 minutes, for an hour, or a culmination of these things, or for a segment. You know what I'm saying? And now we're in this world and space where, like, bro, I can enjoy sports in the same way I talk about this shit with my friends.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the cool part about working at BR, man. It's really like, you know, honing in on that and the cultural standpoint of that, and being able to really, you know, think about the 12-year-old you and think about like how cool it was, like you mentioned, Saturday mornings.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Before like 11 a.m. Central Time kickoff, Big 12 football, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
You're watching Baylor, Kansas, or Oklahoma State, Nebraska, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, seeing that representation of seeing the Stuart Scott on set, you know what I'm saying? Even now, seeing the Desmond Howard on set, you know, how that makes you believe and feel like, oh, I can see myself. And I think that's a big focus and focal point in which I have it right now. And I have with Untold Stories too, is you want to see that level of representation beyond the fact that not just only yourself and the people who like, see themselves in my shoes, but then also getting them to understand that all these athletes also aren't alike. Like, we're not all collectively a monolith. Like, Ricky Williams is not going to be like Darrell Revis. It's not going to be like Ed Reed. It's not going to be like Donovan McNabb. It's not going to be like Percy Hart. Like, all these different people are different people based off of the fact of a lot of different circumstances and factors that they dealt with growing up, and also were able to overcome and find success in as adults.
And you mentioned getting to Bleacher Report now. Something that definitely caught a lot of ears and eyes is on the arena when your essay as far as systemic racism in this country. And you had a nice 2-minute segment about everything that's going on this year, as far as the African-American people being suppressed, all that stuff. What brought it out of you? What caused you, wanted you to get this message out to the masses?
Yeah, man. That was, we recorded that, obviously, the week that the attempted murder of Jacob Blake happened. But that, I don't know if you recall that week. That week was hell. That week was rough, man. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, the night before we're about to record this and shoot this, you know, Chadwick Boseman passes away. You know what I'm saying? It was just like, man, fuck, how many more like hits are we going to take? Like, you know, especially as us as people, it's just like, you know, there was a lot of anger and emotion that just, you know, I just wanted to express and just get off my chest, because I felt like in many ways, I just, you know, you go through your phone, like you can't escape it. You know, even if you want to unplug off social media, like I've tried to do after the verdict of Breonna Taylor, you get text messages nonstop for this stuff. You know what I'm saying? And like, you know, even when you're talking to your homies, like you can't help but somebody bring that up, you know? And it's just, it's something that obviously we collectively have to deal with, you know, through our lives. And that's the burden that we have to carry as Black people. And it's, I guess it's something for me that I've always just kind of, I've recognized people, but just kind of been low key with it. You feel me? Just kind of working behind the scenes with it and not really being that vocal. Because I don't know, I just always felt like people were always vocal. It's just kind of phony or fake with this shit. You know what I'm saying? But you know, I just felt like with this opportunity, you know, I appreciate, you know, Turner Sports, shout out Drew Watkins for the opportunity, and Star Nathan's the one that produced it. You know, it just felt right. You know what I'm saying? It was a Black dude who gave me the green light, and I'm working with a Black woman who produced it. You know what I'm saying? It didn't feel like a platform, an opportunity for me to just come off phony or anything like that. It's more so just expressing how I really feel. Because ultimately, like, I can't help but ask that question in the same way Jacob Blake's father was asking that question, in the same way that I'm sure both of y'all have been asking that question about this country, man. Because, we just, it's enough is enough, bro. Like we done with this shit, man. Like it's like some gotta change soon before, you know, some real shit happens. And I don't know what exactly that is, but I'm saying like we can't keep sitting back and falling back and having each one of these situations and circumstances continue to pop up and not expect anything to change out of it. Like, I don't know what this decade is going to bring. I don't know what this election is going to bring. But you know, I feel like it's going to be something very similar to what the 60s were, and understanding, recognizing, you know, how important it is for all of us to make sure we recognize and understand what role we all play. You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to be the most vocal person on this stuff. Like, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, find your role, whether that's talking to your friends and making sure that, you know, y'all are staying hip in terms of what's really going on. You know, obviously everyone's big right now about voter registration to make sure everybody votes, but also being aware of voter suppression. So how many of y'all are out here volunteering to be out here in these polls, you know what I'm saying, working these polls on election day to make sure that, you know, this is as much of a fair election as we can possibly have.
Yeah.
So all these different factors that play into this stuff, but ultimately, man, it's just the plight of being a black person in America that we just consistently have to deal with. And you know, all we can hope for is that we can try and make this better for the next generation, and the people that come after us, because I don't know if we'll collectively see the whole piece of this pie, you know what I'm saying? But we can just hope that we get as much as we possibly can, so that way the next generation can have a better opportunity for actually seeing equality and what that looks like.
I know that a big part of what I got out of it was like a message of knowing your role, like you're being part of change, like something that's big that can, like you said, affect generations down the line. So that really spoke to me, and I know it spoke to a lot of people. A lot of my friends were talking about it as well. So I thank you for that. For spreading that message, for sure, man.
Appreciate that, man.
So basically growing up in the state of Texas, or just knowing about Texas culture, knowing about the black struggle, what type of mindset do we need to have moving forward for people that look like us to understand that, you know, maybe my vote does mean or count for something?
Yeah. That's a good question, man. Cause like, to be honest with you, I never, like, I voted every single time I've had the opportunity to vote for a national, for a presidential election. But beyond that, like, I did it kind of from a, like, whatever standpoint and perspective, because, man, ultimately, like, it was hard for me to believe in the election process here in this country. Knowing at the end of the day, they really don't give a fuck about me. You know, they generally don't. And I can understand how someone would feel that way. And still feel that way, because, you know, that's something I'm still working through. You know what I'm saying? But as I'm starting to learn and understand and recognize, and I think we all are collectively, in terms of, you know, these different verdicts that have popped up, the charges that get done, and who are the people in power to do all of that. And knowing that, you know, oftentimes it's like a couple thousand people voted for this dude, and a couple hundred thousand people sitting. You know what I'm saying? So it's remarkable to see how much influence and power can be had due to the simple fact that people are just simply ignoring the importance of the position. And so that's what I would keep in mind for people. And that's what I'm keeping in mind too. Cause you know, right now, you know, since I moved back, you know, I'm making sure I register to vote here in the city, in Irving. And beyond the fact, this is something I don't think I've ever really done. I think I've done before, but not to this extent and this early, is researching what else is going to be on my ballot so I can understand as much as I possibly can the different candidates and seeing what they bring to the table. Because it's easy to go right now, just, you know, check off all the boxes and say, you know, you got to get all the Republicans out of office, and you go straight Democrat. But like some of these city, the attorney general situation, you feel me? Like who's going to be the deputy commissioner, like all these different positions, they don't come with a party affiliate. You know, all you see on that ballot is just a name. And in your mind, because there's no political party affiliate to that, so it's just easy to disassociate yourself as if this isn't important. So you're just going to check off a random name or box that, you know, sounds whatever. But you know, understand the importance of that and understand the importance that plays collectively in, you know, state politics and having a representative, someone who represents your community and your neighborhood, so we can avoid situations. Where they're continue to redraw the Texas state map, you know what I'm saying, to further benefit their own agendas and initiatives that they have and, you know, continue to suppress us. And that's due to the simple fact that, you know, literally, I checked the representative here. It came down to a couple hundred votes. It's crazy, you know? And it, the people who voted there was like maybe like 3,000, 4,000 people, you know? So that's what I would just have people remember and recognize, is that, you know, ultimately, you're going to be voting for a president, hoping that you can see some change. But the change that you're really trying to see on a micro level is going to be your city election.
Right.
It's going to be the local and state elections and state elections. And so you should have just as much attention on that. You should do just as much as research on that. You should be just as aware on that as you are with the presidential election. Because presidential election, that's easy. You're going to see that everywhere. But who's going to really tell you what's going on in your city? Uh-huh. You got to keep in tune with that. That's ultimately the role and responsibility we all have as individuals to do right now, because it all meshes together at the end of the day. One of them is macro picture, the other one's micro picture. And you can't have one without the other.
Mentioned Untold Stories took the sports media by storm last year. 2.5 million views per episode, man. You know, it's definitely one of my favorite parts of last year, and you already started season two this season. How did that come to be, man?
You know, it was just an opportunity to host a show at Bleacher Report, which, you know, was a big reason, a big factor why I left the Washington Post. And, you know, finally getting the opportunity, providing the opportunity, you know, in my mind, you know, I wanted to make it the Rhapsody of sports. You feel me? So, yeah. You know, I don't know about y'all, but, you know, Northwest Park, that's my rec center that I grew up on. That was my safe haven. That was my second home. And outside of hooping all day during the summertime, in between hooping, you know, we go in the game room and there's a pool table right there. And, you know, you playing for quarters, you playing for dollars, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Start off at a younger age, you know, playing bumper pool, and then when you're finally old enough, 13, 14, you can give them your ID. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I always enjoyed that environment. I always enjoyed, you know, what that brought, the social perspective of that, and engaging with other people on that. And it's something that I've always cherished just as much as all those times, you know, hooping in the court. And so fast forward now to me being a beat writer, all these different athletes had similar experiences. Growing up, playing pool at the Boys and Girls Club, at a rec center.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? With their ump. What was yours at? Huh? What was yours at? What'd you play at?
Boys and Girls Club every summer.
Yeah, see? And that's one of those things that, like, again, there's no algorithm or analytics or programming that could tell you, like, this is what we do. Because ain't nobody really highlighting pool tables or pool walls right now. Like, that ain't cool, per se. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not. But if you understand the culture, you understand the significance of that. And so when I go to these athletes, cribs, you know what I'm saying, catching up with them, you know, Kiki and stuff, like, they got big-ass pool tables, too, for them big you know what I'm saying?
So you're going to their house.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm saying? Just chopping up at their cribs, just, like, kicking and stuff. And they got pool tables, you know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, sipping on something, you know, shoot pool, just catching up. And just, you know, it creates a great conversation the same way it did when I was a kid. So understanding that environment and understanding how comfortable I feel personally in that environment, and ultimately how other athletes can feel in that environment, to me, it was the perfect setting. And ultimately, I wanted to make the show the Rhapsody of Sports, because in the same way, like, you know, people coming in the basement in that kind of environment, I wanted to have that same feel with Untold Stories when people come to the pool hall. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We can chop it up. You know what I'm saying? You telling a story that you ain't ever told, a couple stories you ain't ever told before. You know what I'm saying? We break bread and we bounce. And I'll see you next time. I'll catch you next time you want to come by. I'll catch you next time we cross paths. Like, a little stop and go situation like that, that for the audience, you get to see the athlete in a different way. And that's the payoff, is that, again, you don't see them in their robotic form that you do in the locker room.
In front of a camera.
Yeah.
Relax.
You see them really for who they are. And again, as Black people, like, that to me is important, because, again, I don't want you to be the whitewashed version of yourself. You know what I'm saying? Because, hey, that's not you. B, I'm really not trying to talk to that version of you. And C, like, the people who are watching this, like, that's a 12-year-old kid, you know what I'm saying, who idolizes you, who respects you, grew up, you know, admiring. You brought some joy to his mind. Even if he didn't root for you per se, he gonna remember like you had this incredible moment. You know what I'm saying? And they're always gonna latch on to that when they think of it. And so, you know, being able to show that authentic version to that, you know, that black child, you know what I'm saying? And letting them understand and recognize that, like, you know, you can still be yourself. And you can still thrive and be successful. And being able to tell stories beyond just their highlights, but letting them know about moments in which, you know what I'm saying, were really rough moments that they had to go through. Because that was something in terms of my career, as you know, I continue to accelerate and still do. How to handle adversity is something that you're taught when you're like in fight or flight mode in Section 8. Yeah. How to handle it in a career path, like, ain't too many people teaching people how to do that, or ain't too many people showing people how to do that. Because all you ever see on social media is their best moments.
Yep.
And so I want to make sure this platform allows people to get gems, and I'm dropping game on them so they can truly understand, like, what's real. And you know, ultimately, if these athletes are retired and they're trying to spit game two on people, this is providing them an opportunity for people to learn from their own lessons and learn from their own mistakes just as much as they can learn from their successes and their wins.
That's huge. So you've had a lot of great athletes that we grew up watching. You know, Ricky Williams, Donovan McNabb up on there. So what is the process to get those guys on there? You know, you talked about, you know, going to some of their houses and, you know, just shooting the breeze and, you know, woo woo. But how does that process go when the team gets on the show?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, for the show, I don't go to their cribs for that. I'm just talking like, you know, as a reporter and just like, you know, the relationships I've been able to establish.
Gotcha.
That was before the show. But in terms of like how we go about that process, man, it's just, you know, we got a good team that, you know, is doing a great job in just terms of just identifying people that we feel like will be a great fit for this. And a lot of it is personality driven. It's also obviously name recognition and face driven. Mm-hmm. But the other part of it is also just like people we just naturally would be just curious about in this kind of environment, in this setting. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because you know, I'll give y'all some, like, you know, we got Victor Cruz on here. And I feel like a lot of people see Victor Cruz in different platforms and settings. But like being able to see Victor Cruz on his platform is a different experience. You know what I'm saying? Darrell Revis, I got so many texts from NFL executives after Darrell Revis episode telling me they've never seen Darrell Revis in that kind of space before.
Mm. Wow.
He's always kind of like reserved, shy, timid. And he was like that when we first chopped it up. But you know what I'm saying? He started opening up more and more and he felt comfortable with it. And it was cool to hear Darrell Revis talking about like, man, I love this show. You know what I'm saying? Before like we even started shooting, like, man, I rock with the show. I like what you're doing. This. It seemed like a cool little thing you had going on. And to hear him afterwards after the shoot talking about, man, I had a great time. You know what I'm saying? Like that just kind of certifies like what we're trying to do here. Ricky Williams said the same thing. I didn't even have to explain to Ricky Williams what I was trying to do. You know, Ricky Williams is very smart in that kind of way. You know, he's hip to understand. Like, he's like, man, this is cool that you, like, there's a platform like this for NFL athletes to really speak out like this. Cause you know, they do whatever, you know, obviously, you know, especially in the NFL, like they try to do everything they can to mitigate their own voices. And especially with black people, it's challenging for you to wake up every morning, be an authentic version of yourself, showing up as your full self to work every day when you know they can cut you tomorrow and ain't no guaranteed money involved in that. So all of that has been fun. I think still to this day, it's still my favorite episode has been Percy Harvin. Percy Harvin, man, that dude's a real one, bro. Yeah. Like, for real. I had heard from so many other people about how genuine of a dude he was. You know, when he jumped on set, it's just great to see what kind of space he's in right now. You feel me? Where it seemed like he come to peace with a lot of things that, you know, that he was overcoming. And, you know, his whole goal and his whole thing right now is just being able to teach other people the lessons, you know, from his career. And, you know, I was happy that we were able to share that moment where, you know, talking about things that he learned, you know, hearing a man being able to own up to their mistakes, you know what I'm saying? Regardless of how they feel about the situation, regardless of what they think, you know, being able to hold themselves accountable for what they felt like, you know what I'm saying, they slipped out on. And ultimately, you know, another athlete being an advocate for the importance of cannabis reform, which I think, you know, is still very much necessary, especially when it comes to pro athletes, because, you know, what's the purpose of prescribing them all these painkillers and lethal injection, pain injection shots that, you know, we don't know what kind of ramifications they're going to have down the road when there's safer alternatives beyond that, you know, can help them get through the week by week recovery process that exists with playing football, playing basketball, playing hockey, whatever the case may be. So it was just a genuine conversation. And I knew after we did that conversation, like, it was like, to me, it verified exactly what I was trying to do with this platform. And it gave an example to everybody else exactly kind of like what we're trying to do moving forward. So, man, that one changed the game, man. That really did.
Right.
So I'm always going to be appreciative of Percy on that one.
Right. That's one of the, like, I have my notes here of different moments from your first season, and that was one of the ones I had listed, along with the Clinton Portis one The hangover. I was like, what? Because I'm a Broncos fan. So I love Clinton Portis. I was like, what, bro, that game? I was like, oh, my God.
Well, it's lit.
Hey, if y'all haven't, that haven't listened to it, y'all got to check it out. I ain't even going, but it's Curtis. Yeah. All the stories, you wouldn't believe.
Hey, it's,
man,
true.
That was one of my favorites.
Yeah. He said that thing off right, man. Yeah. We've had a lot of Canes dudes that on the show. We got another one coming up, actually. We got Devin Hester coming up.
Awesome.
Windy City Flyers. Yeah, man. Okay.
I love them Canes, man. I love talking to them Canes, man, because, you know, they shoot you straight because they understand, this is the really the way we live in. You know what I'm saying?
And a lot of them grew up, all kinds of environments. So I can only imagine.
It's everything they do is very genuine, authentic. Man.
Yeah.
So I'll shout out to everybody in 305. Shout out to everybody in South Florida, man. Because they and just the whole state, man. Because I got a lot of love for Black people out in Florida, man, for real.
For this series, is this something you want to keep NFL based, or have you ever thought about going into other sports?
All the time, man. I think about that all the time. Right now, it's just more so just a matter of just being patient with it. You know, just continue growing what we've been able to build. I love the direction that we're going in right now. And just continue to build the fan base. And you know, as much as I'm proud of the success that myself and Lakia Holmes, shout out to her, my producer, that we both had in season one, you know, it's more so finding ways to elevate that in season two. So from that point, you know what I'm saying? Of course, like I would love to get, you know, current athletes. You know what I'm saying? I would love to get people outside of football. And even I'd love to get people outside of sports, to be honest with you. Like, we are a sports culture, like, you know what I'm saying? There's different people who I think would be fire on this show. So that's like the goal. That's the vision. But, you know, we're just taking one step at a time with it. And, you know, up until then, all we can do is focus on what we got in front of us. And so right now I'm just enjoying the ride, man. It's been fun. This is the most fun I've had in my career. And, you know, getting to a position or a point that, you know, from someone that pulled out $200,000 in student loans and still paying that back to this position now where, you know, be really excited about my career in a way that I never even imagined that so many people told me would not be possible. I'm excited of what's to come, not just with Untold Stories, but, you know, this entire decade. It'll be fun. It's going to be a fun ride.
I don't know about that when somebody or a group of people or somebody tells you, you know, something that you can't do. And it's just like, all right, bet. it's something that matched about that. I don't know what it is, but it's,
I love,
like,
proving motherfuckers wrong, bro.
Yeah.
I love proving motherfuckers wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really ever say that publicly, you feel me? But like, yo, man, when it comes to that shit, I'm a fucking dog. Like, I'm being a lad, you feel me? Like, I don't need to, like, before I'd always bark about that shit and prove people wrong and I found satisfaction in all that stuff. But now, like, I don't even want to use the energy talking. You know what I'm saying? Like, I peep game, hit him with that Cam Newton head nod, and, you know what I'm saying, get to work. That's really what it is. So that's always been a drive for me, man. Especially, you know what I'm saying, you know, I feel like a lot of times you get a lot of no's in Texas. I can recall teachers that told me no's. You know what I'm saying? I can't do shit. I can't do that. Like, you know, that's always going to be fuel for me. And you know, in many ways, like, I didn't expect to be in this position. I don't think a lot of people expected me to be in this position either. So, while I'm here, I might as well fuck it up, you know? So, you know, we're going to keep rewriting a bunch of rules. We're going to keep redefining things, you know what I'm saying? We're going to continue to try and create lanes for people that look like us to really be their true selves in this industry. That was something I set out for day one, you know what I'm saying, when I decided to go down this path in college. And 11 years later, ain't shit changed. Like, we still on that. And we're going to stay on that shit, you know, till my last heartbeat. You feel me? Like, that's really what it is. So... And I feel like ultimately as a Black person in this industry, constantly just, you have no choice but to feed off the no's because you hear so many goddamn times. Like, you're going to get more no's than you are going to get validation. So, you know, it's all good, man. You feel me? Like Pimp C said, it's gravy. You feel me? Like, we work through it. We're going to make it through. We're going to find the beauty and imperfection. We're going to get through it. And at the end of the day, you'll see what's up. I ain't got to say shit. You'll see it.
Some real stuff right there, bro.
That's straight up, man. I mean, like, again, I don't even be talking like that. It's just, that's really how I feel. When you say that shit, that's really how I be feeling. But yeah. Only people that really know that is my circle and my therapist. You know what I'm saying? Beyond that, like, I keep that shit. I'm good.
So we talked about NFL a little bit with the untold stories, but one of the bigger stories in sports right now is how crazy is going down in Orlando at the bubble. Almost every playoff game has been top notch, mm-hmm. on 1,000. Why do you think that is, that the intensity of the bubble games are, if not higher, as matched as the ones that we've seen from the past few years?
Bro, this playoff has been crazy, man. It has been insane. And I think something about being in that confined environment, like, you know, a lot of these dudes grew up in AAU. You feel me? Like, I think there's a level of familiarity that they have that's just kind of drawn them back to their childhood. And there's something to be said about something that you, like, a moment of feeling that you have, like, drawn back from, you know, a moment in your past that, you know, was a great memory that can really fuel you and motivate you in ways that, you know, can unlock different things for you. You know, I don't know too much about Jamal Murray, but that boy balling. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't something I expected at all from this dude. I don't know who the hell. But I'll tell you one thing. Going into the next season, I'm definitely going to be watching more Nuggets games because they got my respect. Michael Porter Jr., I thought he couldn't stay healthy. Like, he kept having those back issues. I'm like, oh, this dude, you know, he going to flame out like a lot of other top picks have. You feel me? And he's been balling out in his bubble. He's been staying healthy. He's been aggressive. Been dunking on dudes. You know what I'm saying? His shots been falling. Like, he has been a much better player than I had probably ever anticipated him being due to the simple fact of the way his career started. And then Jokic has always been Jokic. I just feel like Jokic is finally getting the platform and the exposure that he doesn't get in Denver to really show, like, what he brings to the table as a big man. You know, I think a lot of people always talk about how big men are dead, but I think it's clear to see big men are evolving. You know what I'm saying? And you know, you got him, you got Bam, obviously Joel. It's a different era in terms of what big men are doing right now. That's pretty exciting for me, because I feel like anytime you get, like, people excited about the center position, it typically creates a good era of basketball. You know what I'm saying? It usually has been the position that people have, you know,
forgotten about. Towards. Yeah.
Yeah. They cater towards the center position throughout the history of the NBA. It's just, we've been blessed so much with this unbelievable era of point guards and guard play that it's just been unbelievable that, you know, from MJ on, that has clearly, it's the MJ era. People have been influenced by him. And now it's great to see, you know, skilled, talented big man, you know what I'm saying? Karl Anthony Towns being another one that can do so much at that position and can help evolve the game in such a different way.
Speaking of blessings, how blessed are we as Mavs fans to have Luka Doncic?
Luka! Hey. Luka season, baby! Luka year 3! Luka MVP! You know, Luka the God!
I love it. I love it. Luka!
You know what I'm saying?
Let him know.
Hey, man. To go from, the Mavs wasted the entire end of Dirk's career.
Man.
The entire end of Dirk's career, okay? And that shit still happened. He wanted them. Talking about, like, oh, Dirk's a choker. He ain't going to do nothing.
Yeah, much mad respect for Dirk. And then bouncing us out the playoffs.
Hey, when Dirk, you know what I'm saying, the Mavs was choking, there was so many Lakers fans talking about, like, hey, come on over to the Lakers side, man. Come on. Come ride with Kobe.
Oh, yeah.
Come ride with it.
Get you one before you go out. Yeah. That's what I heard.
Yeah, I heard that same shit, too, man. But if the Mavs games, it literally would be 50-50. Like, there'd be just as many Lakers fans or Kobe fans going crazy, you know, when Kobe's hitting the game-winning jumper, as there would be Mavs fans shocked and disappointed. So, trust me, I'm not surprised. I kind of assume one of y'all would be a Lakers fan, and I assume one of y'all wouldn't be a Cowboys fan. It's good to know which one's which.
Yeah, it was a perfect little dynamic here.
It's Luka all day, man. You know what I'm saying? It's exciting to see what the next 20 years of Mavs basketball is about to be, because that dude's electrifying. Undeniable talent. You know what I'm saying? And it's funny, like, it was hard not to see that from the jump if you were a Mavs fan. As soon as he got to the league, you're like, oh, shit, this dude different. And I was just rapping him hard. You know, obviously, my homies talking about, man, like, relax, you know what I'm saying, and all that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But
nah. That's Dane to me.
Yeah,
oh,
huh? Yeah, that's me. Because living in Dallas, you hear, you're not sure if it's genuine people, like, you know, big up in somebody, or is it just like, okay, here go Dallas media again, hyping up somebody else in order to get us, you know, all riled up. And then here later down the line, we're going to be disappointed. But that doesn't seem to be the case with Luka.
Yeah, we gone through that so much with draft picks, man. Like, man, like, Mavs fans get, like, as much as they, the Mavs get a lot of credit for developing talent. But if you run through those draft picks, bro, they have had some doo-doo. Yo, they have had some terrible-ass picks that have just, like, not worked out or have not been good fits for whatever the case may be. But, hey, for some reason, the European dudes, they know what they're doing.
Man, they draft them for sure.
They know what they're doing, some European dudes. So, hopefully, you know what I'm saying, this offseason, they get, you know, some tougher veterans on the team.
That was my next question around for you, too.
The third guy. They need that third guy.
Somebody to enforce.
Hey, I'm a fan of Hardaway, though. Like, I thought he was going to be a throw-in, and I thought with his contract that he could be, like, a trade piece, an asset to build with, you know, to get somebody else in with Luka and Kristaps. But, yo, man, I'm a fan of Hardaway.
Trey Burke or no?
I think you got to. I think you got to keep Burke, man. I think you got to. They got some good pieces already to build off of, man. It's a young group for the most part. So at this point, it's just finding veterans that they can add that provide that toughness, can help with the defensive mentality, because that clearly was lacking. And then also, you know what I'm saying, just help guide these young dudes, man. Because, you know, like, you got a group of young dudes that can be young, energetic, infectious, but, like, they still need someone that can be the middleman in between the coaching staff, the front office, and the reality in which they live in. So, you know, I'm hoping they can find that. And then plus, like, Dwight Powell coming back. You know what I'm saying? I thought he's a good piece. You know what I'm saying? That you rocking with. Because that pick and roll with him and Dwight, with Luka and Dwight.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it's nice.
And we didn't have Willie Cauley-Stein either.
So I'm excited, man. You know, I'm excited. For some reason, all the struggles the Mavs have gone through had me questioning Rick Carlisle for just a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Coaching style.
You know, he's still riding off the ring in my mind, and just, I mean, just masterful coaching that he had in 2011. And obviously he's had that throughout the course of his career, but I'm like, damn, is this dude done? Is he, you know, with the way things went with some of the rookies, you know what I'm saying? It's like, is he out of touch with the youth? You know what I'm saying? Does he not know how to talk to these younger folks anymore?
Yeah.
And, you know, he showed again that, nah, I'm still that dude. So I'm excited, man. I'm excited about the Mavs future. Cowboys, you know, we'll see what happens. They got talent. CD Lamb, bro. I'm getting that 88. Oh, man. For real.
I saw you tweet that about the
I'm getting that 88. Go ahead. Hey, I'm going to wear that. This is our year fit. You feel me? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to have the jersey. I put the Jorts on there, but you know what I'm saying? I'm going to keep it real Dallas. I'm going to put some Dickies on there. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to wear some. You know what I'm saying? Make sure they cuffed up right on top of the Flint 13s.
Yeah.
I'm feeling really, really Dallas. You know what I'm saying? Get them polo boots out. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
You know, hey, what y'all know about that, man? You know, it's good time. The only thing missing is you know, I ain't, the hair going to be still locked up. So, I ain't about to switch to this.
Get the shag.
You know what I'm saying? I ain't about to go switch to the shag. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, who you got winning at all in Orlando, the bubble? Who's taking it?
Man, I mean, I think he coming out of the East. I mean, at that point, like, I feel stupid if I say otherwise. He balling. Yeah. Heat Lakers, I think, is the move right now. LeBron facing his old team, facing Pat Riley.
That's going to be dicey.
It is. I think it's going to be fun, too. Bam against AD, you feel me? Jimmy versus LeBron. Like, that's going to be
fun. Hero just Jimmy come out.
Dog. Yeah, bro.
Hero, man. Yeah. Hey, balling.
Everybody knew a Ty Hero if they take the school, right? Y'all knew somebody just like him, didn't y'all?
Oh, yeah. He got some bunnies, too. everybody got one.
He always come in with the cutoff shirt that, like, yo, the sleeves are cut off, but even, like, the neck is all you – like, you can still see his pecs and everything. Yeah. Like
the ribs right there a little bit.
Yeah, the ribs. Yeah. Sometimes he wear an undershirt underneath this shit. You know what I'm saying? Like – Yeah, I vividly know it, a Tyler Hero direction it. That, like, I'm just I'm glad you're putting on for them, bro. Keep doing your thing. You know what I'm saying?
the NFL, we saw an unprecedented amount of injuries, like not just, you know, sprained ankles and, you know, things like that, but we've seen some ACL tears and plenty, too many to count. So what do you think possibly contributed to, you know, contributed to that, with maybe the lack of preseason games or just the COVID effect? We still don't know the long-term effects of that, or just...
Yeah, I think a lot of it's just time. Dog, you gotta understand, these athletes, man, a lot of them are just based off of routine. Mm. Like, their schedule is literally fixated, where they know where they're gonna be in January. They know where they're gonna be in February, March, April, like OTAs, mini camp, you know, a couple weeks off, then back to training camp. Like, there's a, like, no matter how much they want to feel like they control their schedule, the NFL controls their schedule. You know what I'm saying? So in a situation where they're not practicing, you know what I'm saying? That schedule, which also involves, you know, workouts, you know, organized team workouts, like, a lot of these dudes have to work out on their own on these kind of situations. You know what I'm saying? And trying to figure out what the best approach and course is to work out. I think that played a role into that. I think, as you mentioned, the lack of preseason and getting reps and opportunities, I think that played a role in that, because I feel like we would see some of these injuries pop up during training camp, week one through week four in the preseason. But, you know, because we just jump, hop, skip straight to the regular season, that maybe we're seeing a culmination of that month or two period all happen in a very condensed, concentrated period. So I think that could play a factor in that as well. And also, again, it depends on how these guys are working out, because I've seen a lot of these different dudes work out in the different styles that they have and their techniques. And, you know, it's crazy how much some guys still don't know how to properly train. And believing all it is just lifting as big and fast and, you know, strong weights as you possibly can, when, like, you know, peeping different people, like, you know, being around Alvin Kamara, he's worked out. Being around Trent Williams, they've worked out. It's just seeing, like, how important the smaller muscles are to work out. You know, how important, you know what I'm saying, it is to work on agility and quickness. You know what I'm saying? Plyometrics and all those different things that are just as important as, like, yo, rapid, you know, upping your bench press during the offseason. So I think that also had a play. It's a combination of things, I think it is. It's just – it sucks to see, man, because you talk about a game that's obviously comes down to attrition.
Man.
Like, we're saying Saquon out for the year. You know what I'm saying? Say what you want about Nick Bosa, but, you know, he's out for the year. You know what I'm saying? We saw Jerry McCoy out for the year for the Cowboys. Yeah. I thought that was a huge loss. You know what I'm saying?
Hurt. All the Broncos, top players gone. Man, I'm like,
Miller,
yeah,
Dallas State, everybody. Feel me? Like,
Cortland Sutton, everybody, man. I already tapped out of this year.
It's crazy. You're going to see dudes who's playing the XFL. Yeah. You know, so, yeah, I'm going to be repping the jersey. Yeah. You're going to see some former Renegades over here on these teams. That's ultimately what it could come down to, is that, you know, whoever has the healthiest team is probably going to be the most – it's going to have the best chance of succeeding.
Like what Dex said, the healthiest team wins.
Healthiest team. That's what it's going to look like. But, man, we appreciate you. We got one more little thing for you to do, and then we'll let you go. We've given you a lot of our time, and you've given us a lot. We appreciate you so much,
super
man.
Super appreciate it, man.
Dane and I, on our previous episode, we did our predictions for the NFL. So I'm going to ask you to do that. We did an MVP, playoff team, and Super Bowl picks. So you got it. Got it kind of easy now, because injuries. You know, we didn't have all that. So we just went off
2 weekend start as well. Yeah.
Well, look, hey, I'm gonna keep it a buck, okay? Because this is what I said before the year started. I have Russell Wilson as my MVP.
Same as Deontay.
Now that was that's what I had. Yeah.
That's on God. You know what I'm saying? No, that's how I was feeling. Yeah. So 2 weeks in, hey, we feeling good right now.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We feeling good. I also said I had the Seahawks win the Super Bowl.
Okay, I had the Seahawks in it, but I had the Chiefs winning it.
Okay, see, I had Hawks Chiefs too.
Okay.
So I had the Hawks win it. I'm a little skeptical of their pass rush, especially now that Bruce Irvin, another key injury out for the year. They already didn't have enough pass rushes as it is. So it'll be interesting to see how they navigate that, but I mean, they seem to be pretty good at every other position. So they look poised to be making a great run. I had Hawks beating the Chiefs. You know, personally, I can't keep picking the Cowboys, man. Like, as much as I think I got, you know what I'm saying? I got the Cowboys coming out of the NFC East, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's hard for me to say much else beyond that. Out of the West, I got the Hawks winning that division. In terms of who it comes down to, you know, the wild card is a toss up. I think the other two wild cards in the NFC can literally come out of the NFC West.
And we got an extra wild card now in each conference too.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So shit, it could be that whole division if we're being honest. So you know, all three of them look incredible right now. They look really good. And even with the 49ers, all the injuries they have, and they show, you know, how much depth they're able to have.
Yeah.
NFC North, Packers run away with that. I think it's pretty clear. I had Packers preseason as well, winning that division. And I can't see a scenario in which anyone else, you know.
Yeah, nobody else in that division. The Bears are 2-0, but I don't know if are they real, though?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you know, can you really trust Mitchell Trubisky, you know? They fucked up on many occasions in terms of their quarterback. They've got a good defense, you know what I'm saying? And that'll keep competitive in these games. So we'll see how it happens. But, you know, they'll be competitive down the stretch. But, I still think NFC West is loaded where I could see a scenario all three of them somehow, some way get in. You know what? Down south, NFC South, that's it, no matter how many people come out of the NFC West, I could see a scenario that the South has a couple in it too, where I thought the Saints would win that division. I think, you know, I thought before the CMC injury that, you know, the Panthers would be competitive involved. And obviously the Bucks. Like, I think the Bucks are capable of winning a wild card, though I think they're going to struggle to start off with because continuity matters so much right now. They got a lot of new pieces that they're trying to piece together. But, hey, that defense is solid, and that's carrying the team right now, if we're being honest. Yeah. Leonard Fournette looked like the Leonard Fournette we saw at LSU.
What was out of there?
You know, so as long as Tom Brady can do enough as, like, a game manager, which I know we don't say too much about Tom Brady, you know, they should be on the hunt for a playoff position. So that's on the NFC. AFC West, easy. Chiefs, go ahead and knock that one out of the park. Raiders been doing Broncos. That. Yeah, that's surprising, though. I forgot you a Broncos fan.
Yeah, sorry, man. Broncos.
It's cool. I tapped out this year, bro. It's a wrap. I already know it.
Yeah. I will say this. Hey, Noah Fant looked like the real deal.
I love Noah Fant.
Noah Fant looked like the real deal. I've been skeptical. I feel like the Broncos keep drafting tight ends that just don't pan out. So, but Fant looked like the real deal. So, at least you got something to build off of on that. And that defense is always going to keep you competitive in some ways. Yeah. At least for me as a gambler, they're going to always cover the spread. So, that's Chiefs coming out of AFC West. What we got? AFC North, you know, Ravens. But it's clear the Steelers going to be competitive too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think the Steelers going to take one of them wild card spots. That defense looks as nasty as it did last year. Deontay Johnson along with Juju Smith-Schuster, along with Chase Claypool. Bro, I don't know what it is
they
in that
hit water. The money wide receivers, man,
they know how to find wide receivers.
One of my other close friends, Sean, the diehard Pittsburgh fan, and that's all he's been preaching. Is like, they could pick any receiver out the hat, and they're gonna be all pro damn near.
Yo, pretty Deontay much. Johnson is a dog.
Yeah.
Yo, this dude's about to go off this year. I don't know if people really recognize that, but like, he's really gonna go off.
Yeah.
So you know they're gonna be competitive. I think honestly. It's going to come down to one of them classic AFC North battles where, like, it comes down to, like, you know, whenever the last time the Ravens and Steelers face each other, that's what the division comes down to.
Whole I think game.
Outside of that, you know, Bengals, Browns, they bottom feeders. AFC South, man, that division is interesting, man. It always is for, always the weirdest and wildest reasons.
It is, yeah.
I went with the Titans, and I actually had – you know, it was between Mike Tomlin and Mike Vrabel in terms of Coach of the Year candidates. I think I went with Mike Vrabel just because, man, like, Ryan Tannehill looks like a completely different quarterback. You know, he finally was able to unleash and get the most out of Derrick Henry. And that defense, man, that defense got some dogs, you know what I'm saying? So I think they'll win the South. The Colts will be competitive, and they'll be in there as well, but I'm just not a big believer in Phillip Rivers, if I'm being honest. I think a lot of people are gassing him up. Or circumstances, situations in which he's not going to get any better. He's gotten older. His accuracy is already
gone. He's out of there.
Yeah.
You feel me? So, and then we got the Texans, man. Free. Deshaun just got paid, man. But,
They got to get Bill out of there, bro.
You feel me? It's always, you know what I'm saying? When people talking shit about Texans, you know what I'm saying? I'm cool with banding together with them Houston folks.
Yeah.
But when it comes to sports, I hope they all fail. But, I love Deshaun so much, it's hard for me to root against him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I want him to succeed. I want him to do well. It's like that dude is built different.
Yeah.
So he just doesn't have a lot of support around him, man. So it's just an unfortunate situation when they try him to be Superman way too many times when like he should be getting some support and some help.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that plays out. And then what other division we got? AFC East. I think the Patriots still going to take that. Killing going most improved player, clearly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, that's fact.
He running with that thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Bills going to be up there, too. I don't want to undermine the Bills at all. Because, Josh Allen, surprisingly, after week two, led the league in passing yards.
He got weapons now.
Stephon Diggs is balling, bro.
Diggs is balling. You know what I'm saying? He's doing his thing. That defense is obviously still nasty. So, but if it comes down to, one of them Bills-Patriots games down for the division title, and I got to bet between Cam Newton and Josh Allen, bro, give me Killer Cam off.
Yeah, all good.
Yeah, man, that's my rundown there in terms of what I think. Okay.
And then you got Seahawks, Chiefs too, but Chiefs Seahawks taking it.
I got the Hawks taking it, man. Okay.
So the MVP, but I
we'll hold you
Russ,
to that.
I definitely see Russell. Yeah, I'm gonna lock your picks in. Got to get back to you on that.
Okay. Hey, have me on the end of the year. We'll talk again. All right?
Oh, for sure, man. Hey, thank you once again, man, for joining us. Every time we have a guest, we like to have them spit their social media plugs and anything else they want to say as we go out, man.
Untold Stories Season 2. Go check it out. Go check it out on Facebook Watch. Go check it out on my Instagram, on IGTV. My Instagram is Master_Tespotsian. It's my last name. Check me out on Twitter, MasterTES. Just stay tuned. You know, beyond Untold Stories, we got some other things cooking. So I always got something in the lab. So right now, go ahead, support, show love to Untold Stories Season 2. Tell your friends, go drop that in your group chats, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, really?
Let them know that the representation you've been looking for, the sports show you've been waiting on, is here.
Hey, we'll do, really? Man. We'll do, man. Whenever this COVID thing ends, bro, we got to kick it in Dallas. That's on top.
What's up, man? Yeah, we're going to have some tacos, you know what I'm saying? We're going to hit up something, bro.
Hey.
Whatever it is, you let me know. Make sure we get them hot and tacos in. Hell, we can hit a Rudy's chicken. You know what I'm saying? Let's have some fun with it.
For sure. Appreciate you guys for listening in and watching. This is the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. You can find us on any streaming platform or on our website, www.duosportsandstuffpodcast.com. Thanks.